Hi guys, and welcome back to Mindful Minds. I just wanted to hop on really quick before this episode started and give a quick trigger warning. We talk about suicide, which is timestamped in the episode description, and we also talk briefly about eating disorders, which is also timestamped. And then we talk generally about trauma, childhood neglect, and childhood abuse. Now, this is our fourth episode in the Inner Child December series, and we're going to talk with Evelyn today about reparenting intergenerational trauma. And then next week, we have our finale of the series with our finale guest, Morgan Harper Nichols, and we're going to talk about art and inner child work and all of that kind of stuff. But if you've missed the last three episodes, feel free to go back and catch up. We've talked with Jordan Dan about relationships. We've talked with Chelsea Horton about dance therapy and play. And then we've talked with Cassandra Dunbar about resting and how that can impact our inner child. Thank you guys so much for all the feedback about the Inner Child December series. It's been so much fun to do, and I've really enjoyed the series format. So maybe check in next week for our finale to hear a little bit about what January 2023 is going to look like. But until then, I hope you guys enjoy this episode. This is a great one. And then join us next week for our finale. Hi, all, and welcome back to Mindful Minds. Thank you so much for joining us. Welcome to the fourth episode of our Inner Child series. We are going to be talking about generational trauma and reparenting our inner child. And for that conversation, we have Evelyn of At Evolve with Evelyn. How are you today?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm good. I'm so glad to have you on. This is one of the conversations that I really wanted to make sure that we hit, because so far we've hit relationships, we've talked about rest, we've talked about play, we've talked about a lot of different things, but I wanted to make sure that I had some time set aside to talk about the trauma aspect. And obviously I think that trauma really like intersects with all of these conversations. But I think specifically reparenting is a concept that is so interesting to me, the idea of trying to kind of meet your own needs when your parents didn't. And so I think that's a really vital part of inner child healing for those of us who have trauma, and especially childhood trauma. And so I'm really glad that this is our second to last episode and to kind of start to finish off the series. So I wanted to give you a chance too, though, just to give some of your background for any listeners who might not know you, want to have a little bit more context. Yeah. So do you want to share a little bit about yourself and how you got started?
Yeah, for sure. So hello, everyone. My name is Evelyn Huynh. And I just want to put a disclaimer out there. So I am not a mental health professional. So I don't ever really use the words like childhood trauma. I don't help clients heal from childhood trauma. So for legality reasons and just for like ethics purposes, like I use childhood wounds. And now here's the thing is that I also have a background in studying inherited family trauma. So it's really like this weird line and dance that I dance between. So I've like worked under certain like facilitators. And so with generational trauma, I use generational trauma, but with childhood trauma specifically, I actually only use words like inner child wounds, childhood wounds. So I just want to put that out there. But just so that you kind of know a little bit about me and my background and kind of why I'm passionate about this topic and really why I guess I'm qualified to even be talking on aspects of inner child healing as well as generational trauma is that I'm first generation Asian Canadian. And if you don't know what that means, it means that my parents were born and raised in Vietnam, which is a communist country. And when you grow up in countries like that, like the state owns you, you are not your own person, you belong to the government. And there's a lot of trauma that comes with that. So my family actually escaped China, like my lineage escaped China, communism in China, and then left to Vietnam. So there are basically these outsiders in Vietnam. And then Vietnam, the climate wasn't that great. So then they basically had to escape Vietnam and come to North America. So just so that you kind of understand about where my family comes from, my aunt was 14 years old when she left Vietnam on her own to go on a boat for 2 months to come to North America. And then she immigrated the rest of my family over. So there's deep, deep traumas that run in my lineage that I didn't really even know about until honestly the last couple of years, and I didn't know that it was actually affecting me. So I grew up being extremely bullied for my weight. I struggled with severe anxiety, depression. I started having suicidal ideations when I was about 12 years old, and it was a really scary time. And at that time, I didn't understand why I was struggling so bad. And fast forward, I started my first business as a personal trainer. And when you're a personal trainer, fitness health coach, you're also doing a lot of mindset work. So that's really my first insight into helping people kind of understand why their mind was wired the way that it was. Naturally, that progressed into business coaching. So I had a really successful career with business coaching. But what I started realizing in 2019 was that I wasn't super fulfilled just helping people make a lot of money, because what I started noticing in all these different industries was that people would see the results and then they would just lose it all. And when I say lose it all, they would self-sabotage, make the money, but they would spend it all. And there was something that kind of made me go, there has to be something happening beneath the surface that no one's talking about. And so in early 2020 was when I got certified in neuro-linguistic programming, clinical hypnotherapy, emotional freedom techniques, time techniques. And then from that journey, I became a master practitioner of all of those modalities, and then eventually became a trainer. So I actually train other people to become life coaches and success coaches. And I've also trained under practitioners in inherited family trauma training. So for me personally, I love everything about the subconscious mind. I love geeking out about it. I love understanding why human beings work the way that they work and why they self-sabotage. And so for me, I'm also Scorpio. So as a water sign, like, I love to go deep. Like, I always tell my clients, like, dump all your trauma on me. I have this, like, one of my special gifts is like transmuting energy. So I just take all of your darkness, I hold it, I carry your burdens, and then we transmute it. And it's just such a beautiful journey. So I'm super honored to be here to chat with you guys all things inner child and generational trauma.
Yeah. Thank you so much for sharing that too. It's always nice to have a little bit of background on, you know, who I'm talking to and the conversation we're going to have and how it impacts, how your background impacts the conversation as well. And so I wanted to, your page stuck out because as I was looking for guests to have on this Inner Child series, like I said, I didn't want to leave behind the reparenting aspect and the generational trauma aspect, because I do think that so much of the inner child conversation is society as a whole. And I was just talking about this. I just recorded an episode this morning for the Inner Child series. And we were talking about the fact that just society as a whole, I think Western society specifically.
Yeah.
Because that's all that I know. So that's all I'll speak on. but Western society as a whole, our society doesn't teach us to hold our inner child gently. It doesn't teach us to embrace that childlike side of ourselves as adults. Like, that's not something that is taught in society. And so even if you are someone entirely without any trauma, if you don't have childhood trauma at all, that's not something that you struggle with, you can still have severe inner child like disconnects, because society just doesn't really teach us to meet our inner child's needs as adult. It also teaches us as children to grow up really, 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 really fast and to not really embrace being a kid. All of society is kind of geared towards how can you grow up fast, mature fast, and succeed, whatever that looks like in your life. And that can vary, you know, city to city, that can vary family to family, but the whole goal is kind of just to grow up quickly. And on top of that, in the last, you know, 20 years with the progression of social media, kids haven't really had the option but to grow up quickly, because media is just like so pervasive and it's everywhere. And there's so many like mature themes that are in media that you have such incredible access to because of how available like the internet is and how available social media is. So even if you don't have trauma, I want to like really reiterate that it is still completely valid for you to feel like you need inner child healing, even if you don't relate to the childhood trauma aspect or the generational trauma aspect of this. And that is totally fine. That's so valid. I just wanted to make sure that I
held space during this series for people who experienced really intense childhood wounds and specifically experienced things from parents or grandparents or generational trauma or whatever that felt like they had some inner child wounds and they had some needs that weren't met. I wanted to make sure that I created a space during the series to specifically address that. And so with all that being said, let's dive into the generational trauma aspect first, because you talk a lot about that on your page. So how can we, as adults, hold space for our inner child while healing from generational trauma specifically? And even if you want to give a little bit of a crash course on what generational trauma is for people who might have no idea.
Okay, so there was a couple of things that you kind of said that I kind of want to add like my two cents on, because they are questions and concerns that people share with me all the time. Like when I do presentations, like there'll at least always be someone that's like, well, you know, my childhood was great. My parents are together. They love me. They provided for me. And as a practitioner and as someone who has worked with over 100 clients, I have never met a single person who hasn't experienced some sort of childhood wounding in one way or another. And now that's another thing, is that society teaches us that trauma has to be these big, complex, like these big things, right? Like trigger warning, like suicide, murder, rape, assault, like things like that. But what you don't realize is that even something as small as when you were 5 years old and mom and dad wanted to go on vacation and they dropped you off at grandma's place and, you know, you were sleeping when they dropped you off and then you woke up and they weren't there and then you're crying for them for 2 weeks, like that can be traumatic for a child. And so going into generational trauma, so the basis of generational trauma, and by the way, you can call it inherited family trauma, you can call it intergenerational trauma, they're really all the same thing. It really studies epigenetics and essentially how the effects of trauma from one generation that goes unhealed can actually be passed on to the next generation. And there's a really great book by Mark Wolin that is called It Didn't Start With You. And inside of this book, it really dives deep. Like there's so many different therapists and scientists and psychologists and all these different really credible doctors that have studied in their field to really come together to bring to light this book. Because when it comes to generational trauma, it's still kind of in a way new. Like a lot of traditional psychiatrists, psychotherapists, therapists, they actually don't really talk about generational trauma because they don't really know much about it. So I definitely recommend kind of looking into that for yourself. But one of the most fascinating things that I learned personally when it comes to generational trauma is that a female fetus is born with all the eggs that she will ever have in her lifetime. So if you kind of close your eyes for a second and you think of your grandma, okay? You think of your grandma and then your grandma is 5 months pregnant with your mom. The precursor cell of the egg that you developed from was actually present in your mom's ovaries, which basically means that the three of you guys actually have shared the same biological environment at one point in time. So when I think back to when my grandma was 5 months pregnant with my mom, there was a lot of trauma that was happening in her life. There was a lot of stress, financial stress. You know, they were living in Vietnam, communism. So studies have actually shown that a mother's emotional, like a mother's stress, their emotions can actually chemically alter the, like affect the offspring. So it's kind of wild when you really think about how much your current reality, your behaviors, your patterns, your thoughts are actually connected to previous generation.
Yeah, that's wild. I didn't know the egg thing. That's crazy. And I mean, can I ask, because generational trauma is not something that I have unpacked very much at all, which is one of the reasons why I thought it'd be really interesting to talk about. It Didn't Start With You is on my reading list. I can't tell you how many times I've had guests on the podcast recommend it. It has been like a very recommended book. So that's on my list, but I haven't dived into it too much. So can I ask, with generational trauma, there's the biological side of it, like you just described. What about the emotional side of it? Of if you have, you know, let's say grandma has an eating disorder. Let's go with that.
Yeah.
Grandma has an eating disorder. Grandma then, you know, talks about her body, talks about food in a way that is, you know, really negative and really critical. Mom hears that. Mom then develops an eating disorder. Mom talks about her body in a way that is really critical and negative. Kid then develops an eating disorder. You know, is that also a form of generational trauma of just the passing down of like certain, you know, disorders and emotions, and not necessarily from a genetic perspective, but just from a, you hear it and then you learn it and then you pass it down?
Yeah. So 100%. So I think it's important for you to kind of understand maybe what happens in your body. So this is a fact that has literally changed my entire life and how I see people. So in school, we're taught about DNA, right? Like DNA, like, oh, you have your mom's eye color or you have your grandma's hair. But what they haven't actually told us is that less than 2% of our total DNA is actually that chromosomal DNA, which is our physical traits. So like our eyes, our hair, our skin color. So then the question is like, well, then what is the other 98% of our DNA? It's something called non-coding. So your non-coding DNA is actually responsible for your emotional, your behavioral, and your personality traits, which can then also be influenced by your environmental stressors. So like toxins, inadequate nutrition, and stressful emotions. So knowing that that is what's going on in your cells and in your DNA is like one part of the equation of generational trauma. Now you can think of that as like a seed, right? A seed, like a rose, a seed of a rose is only ever going to grow into a rose. It's not going to just accidentally grow into a banana tree. You know what I mean? But depending on the environment, then that, how that environment that seed grows up in influences what it becomes. So for example, if you grew up in that house, so for example, if in your lineage, there have been wounds of like not feeling good enough, like body shaming, body dysmorphia, things like that. And then you grow up in a household, now you're hearing these things consistently, that continues to recreate those patterns from generation. Now we're going to get into inner child. So like generational trauma, you can think of as like the root of inner child wounds. So before the age of 7, you are a walking subconscious mind. And what you need to know about this is that you are not your own person. You are a sponge to your environment. You don't have the conscious part of your mind to discern between like to discern. You are literally just soaking it in. So the way that you view money, the way that you view people talking about their bodies, the way that you view relationships and marriage, you are witnessing it around you. So if you as a little kid have only ever witnessed your mom having a really horrible relationship with food, constantly feeling like the pressure to need to work out, constantly having negative self-talk, you kind of embody that as your own. You start taking in it like, oh, that's how I should be talking to myself. That's how I should view my relationship with my body. Now at age 7, your conscious mind starts to deform. This is where you're supposed to become your own person, have your own identity, have your own values and beliefs. But this is where now generational trauma comes in the picture. And we actually call this like merging. So if there's generational trauma at play that hasn't been healed, you have a broken bond with your mom or your dad, you can actually stay merged with your parents at age 7 and beyond. And so this is where you start to notice like how so many of us are such similar beings to our parents. Like we're either splitting images of our parents, we act like them, we talk like them, and or we actually attract partners that are very similar to our parents. It's wild.
So can you explain that part? Because I'm interested in that. Let's say that, because obviously not everyone is a walking, you know, spitting image of their parents. So where is that like divergence, I guess, like where's the fork in the road where some kids turn out to be really, really, really similar to parents and some are like the exact opposite of parents? Is that something where, is that having a healthy childhood environment where your parents encourage independence and there isn't that like codependence or control? Is that what causes, or like, not causes, but I guess allows for a child to have that sense of independence and start to develop separately from parents?
Oh, 100%. And if you do end up reading It Didn't Start With You, Mark Wolin really breaks it down. So it really, in a nutshell, when you think about it, when a child comes into the world, they are so dependent on mom and dad. And so detachment for longer periods of time can cause a break in the bond, which is kind of also where you can kind of see where trust issues start to form. Like, I can't trust my mom with my emotions. I can't trust my mom to be there for me when I need it. Right. And so that's where, you know, there's so many different aspects of this, but one of the things that it could lead to with this break in the bond is like to merge with our parents. And so when you really kind of think about it, the environment is a huge, huge aspect. Like, there's a reason why so many people who are like healed and healthy and like living a fulfilled life and like feel like they have that sense of self-worth and have high self-esteem, they are similar to their parents, but they're not repeating the same patterns because they've learned to separate themselves, unmerge from their lineage, if that makes sense.
Yeah. I mean, if you have a pattern of toxic, negative behavior, and like it's logical that if you are able to separate yourself from that, do your own work, do your own therapy, figure out how to heal and separate and part ways. And even I know, like, coming from a religious background, like a massive part of that for a lot of religious kiddos is deconstruction. And the thing that I find really interesting about deconstruction and the way it's spoken about, it's become quite the buzzword in the last like 5 years. And the funny thing about deconstruction is it's a like philosophical idea that's been around for like years. And it didn't always just apply to religious deconstruction. Like, the whole idea of deconstruction is that you go through a phase in your adolescence or in your early adolescence or early adulthood where you start to, you know, unpack what your parents taught you and what society has taught you. And anytime you're in an environment as a kid, whether your parents are attempting to give you freedom or independence or separate their belief system from what they want you to, you know, figure out for yourself, there's always going to be some aspect of something that is, you know, semi-imposed on you, whether that's just through society teaching you that, you know, we can take gender roles as an example. Gender roles, society teaching you a woman needs to do this, a man needs to do this, and that's period. Even if your parents fight that as much as possible and try to provide as much of a, you know, hospitable environment for challenging gender roles, it still is probably going to creep in some way, whether you see it in some random TV show or like whatever, it's probably going to creep in. And so the whole idea of like deconstruction from a really broad sense and not from just like a zoomed in religious sense is, you know, the idea that you are deconstructing what you've learned and your ethic system and your value system. And you hit a point in your early adulthood where you reach that state of independence and you're able to kind of break down what you learned, pick and choose what you'd like to keep, or if you don't want to keep anything, completely rebuild and then reconstruct and rebuild a life and kind of an identity of, okay, I'm an adult. I figured out, I have life experience, a little bit of life experience under my belt. I've met some different types of people. How do I want to construct my value system? And so for me, as a like someone who was grew up in religion and then deconstructed that, my deconstruction wasn't just religious. It wasn't just me saying, okay, these are the things I believe religiously. It was me hitting, you know, 20-ish and deciding, okay, I'm independent. I live away from my parents. I get to kind of make my own rules and decide what I want to believe. And that was when I recognized some patterns in my childhood and in my family lineage as well, and said, those are harmful to me and I don't want those in my life anymore. And so that was where I went to therapy, went to support groups and started to unpack that, figure out how I wanted to kind of rewrite those things for my own life. And so I found it funny in the last like 5 years, because a lot of people have come out as like anti-deconstruction. And it's like, hang on, like deconstruction has been around for a really long time. It's not just religious. It's just essentially the idea that you start to grow up and you start to become an adult and you kind of get to choose whether or not you'd like to just completely follow in your parents' footsteps, which that's also not a negative thing necessarily. If you really examine your thought processes and you say, I really like the way my parents did things. Like, I really like their ethics systems and I really like their belief systems. Choosing that is not like a negative point on your end. It doesn't mean you're like less of an adult or you've, you know, healed less than other people. If you grew up in a really healthy environment and you really liked the way your parents did things, that's fine. That's not a negative thing. But it's just essentially you get the choice to decide as an adult whether or not you'd like to keep that or whether or not you'd like to toss it and figure out something new or whether or not you'd like to kind of have this like blended mindset where you take some stuff from your parents and some stuff from what you've learned, some stuff from the world, some stuff from that one class you took in college and kind of blend it all together to create your ethics system. And so once we kind of hit that, this is where, and I'm speaking completely from personal experience here. I have no science to back this up, but this is where I've noticed that a lot of people in my life, people that I've seen online, because I have this like little baby deconstruction community online. And this is where I've noticed like a lot of people start to notice the inner child stuff. Because I think once you start to kind of rebuild your value system and you realize, I actually really value, you know, let's say physical touch. I really value physical touch and I love getting hugs and I love that really fills me up. And you look back at your childhood and you realize that was missing. And so that's a lot of the times like where I've noticed that this inner child awareness kind of comes in where you're like, I feel like I was missing that. And I can feel that wound and I can feel that gap. And that's where a lot of adults start to kind of, okay, how can I meet this need? And I was just talking to a previous guest about this, about sometimes it starts in really funny ways. Like I know for me, it started with like, I wasn't really able to have certain foods as a child. And so my first like dip into inner child work was like, you know what? I'm going to buy myself chicken nuggets and ketchup and Gushers. And that's going to be what I eat. And that was like my first time kind of diving into it. And so it might not like rear its head with like, I was not given love as a child and now I must find love for myself. It might like rear its head in like really like subtle ways. And so with all that being said, when you have a child that has a lot of wounds and you have needs that weren't met, sometimes you don't really get to be a child. You might have, you might be too preoccupied with like parenting your parent. If your parent is, it's a really chaotic home environment, or maybe you're diffusing conflict and you're kind of playing the parent in that role, but you're not really able to just fully dive into being a kid and playing. So when we're talking about that and we're talking about not really getting to fully have our needs met as a child, how might you be able to start to kind of embrace your childlike self as an adult and start to come in and meet those needs as an adult?
Yeah, this is a really great question. I mean, this is really where reparenting kind of comes into the picture. And I really like what you said about how it kind of starts off in sometimes odd ways. I always say our triggers are our teachers. So when I'm working with clients specifically, your triggers are the clearest way for you to be able to kind of go back into your childhood or go back into your lineage and see where it really comes from. Like I just had someone message me on Instagram, and because I was sharing a story about how my mom's a Gemini and she's very airy and she's just always like, she makes me so anxious being around her because her mind goes a million miles per minute. And that was one of my childhood wounds, is that I just never felt like I was good enough. I always felt like I was just one step behind. I never felt like I was doing enough, all those things. And someone messaged me, they're like, yeah, my mom was visiting this weekend and I was really triggered in the parking lot because of the way that I was parking. And so if that's like for you, like a question that I feel like a lot of people have is like, how do I even begin inner child healing? Like, I love everything that you guys are talking about, but where do I go from here? Pay attention to your triggers, because we actually as human beings get triggered very, very, very often. We just usually suppress it or run away from it because it's really uncomfortable. But if you actually give yourself the space and time to kind of sit with, why is this angering me? Or why am I sad about this? Or why do I feel guilt? And why do I feel shame? Like, why? It will actually give you a lot of answers diving from there, instead of just being like, I'm going to heal my inner child today. What should I do? Right?
Right. Right. That's a little too big of a question.
One of the first things I always recommend people is go back to like, close your eyes and just go back to childhood for a second. Like, what did you love doing? What did you enjoy doing? So for me, when I was really starting this journey, I love swinging on swings. Like, it just, there's something so cathartic about swinging so high. I love adrenaline. So like anytime, like it feels like my heart's just falling out of my chest. Like I'm so happy, and it just all the feelings. So for a while I was going to the park every single day, swinging on swings, being the only adult there. And there was this one moment where there was a little kid beside me and his dad was swinging him. And I just started crying out of nowhere. And I was like, wait, what's going on? And it just reminded me that as a little kid, I didn't have that. I didn't have a father who was present to take me to the park, or even a mother. Like, both of them were struggling with different things. Like, my mom was just like emotionally volatile because she was a stay-at-home mom, very disempowered, took all of her anger out on me. My dad, on the other hand, he was working all the time. He was the breadwinner, so he physically could not be there with me. So in that moment, that was really cathartic, and that was very healing, because it was like, wow, like I get to take myself to the park now. Like, I get to give myself that time and care and attention. And on top of that, I know that when I have kids, one of my things is that I want to be able to be present with them. I want to be able to take them to parks. I want to spend that time with them. I want to make sure that they know that they're the apple of my eye. So what is it that you enjoy doing as a kid? And if the answer is, well, I was surviving, which is very much the case for a lot of people, right? Like, if you spent your childhood in cars because your mom or dad was going into a drug house, which honestly is actually a more common case than not,
right?
Then now is the time that you get to explore. Like, it gets to be fun for you now. Like, go take a pottery class, go take a horseback riding lesson. When you know what you don't like, you know what you do like.
Yeah, no, that's been something that I've also noticed, the pattern of kind of you hit whatever age, whatever time in your life you hit this inner child, you know, journey at. And I will say, I know a lot of people that it's in their 20s. I also know some people that it's like happened in their 40s and they hit, you know, 45 and they're like, hang on, there are some things missing here and I have some needs that weren't met. A big thing that I've noticed is people figuring out, oh, well, all these things that I thought I liked, I actually didn't like, and kind of relearning themselves, because sometimes even the environments that you grew up in, sometimes there are certain things that maybe you thought you really enjoyed and you didn't, because maybe they were forced upon you, or maybe you didn't really have a lot of independence to choose what you liked, or maybe you grew up in an environment where there wasn't funding. And so maybe you didn't really get to explore things that cost money that you might like to do. And so, yeah, I think the trying to like actually, I don't know, like learn your identity and figure out what really makes you you and what really like, I don't know, brings you joy sounds really cliche. But I really do think that like a huge part of my college experience was I had come out of an abusive relationship. I was just starting to kind of unpack the, okay, I have some needs that are not being met. I definitely replicated some of this in this relationship. Like, how do we move forward? And a huge part of that was literally just trying random shit and just being like, okay, well, I don't like that. One of them was being, I always thought my favorite color was pink, because it was just kind of like a society thing. And I was like, yeah. All right, cool. Sure. Yeah. Pink. And I like had decorated my whole dorm room with like pink and gray. And I just was kind of like, I don't think I like that very much. Like, I don't actually think that's my thing. And I had discovered that I really liked antiquing, just kind of on a whim. I went with somebody and realized I really, really enjoyed it. And then in this antique shop, felt this like really overwhelming feeling of calmness and happiness that I'd never really consciously felt before.
Yeah.
And I remember like texting, I think it's my sibling, and being like, I felt so happy today. Like, I felt so calm and I felt so happy. And I realized that in the antique shop, I gravitated towards so many things that were yellow and green.
Mm.
And I was like, okay. And so then I sat down and I quite literally made a list of like things that I think make me happy. Because I wasn't quite sure, but things that I think make me happy. And I was like, okay, yellow and like candles and cozy things, and kind of went through the list and found like, and at first they were kind of general, like, you know, like most people like things that are cozy, like they were kind of general things. And then I started to kind of hone in a little bit and realize, okay, this type of music and this type of this and this type of art. And
totally relearned myself as an individual. Like, I didn't know any of these things about myself and was able to then completely redo my environment and felt a lot calmer, a lot happier, a lot more, like a lot less stressed. And it in no means like fixed all of my environment, but it was nice to have an environment that I actually felt comfortable in and felt like it was a good representative of who I was as a person. But all of that was like a conscious thing that I had to like relearn. It wasn't me just like waking up one day and being like, I think I really like yellow and green. I literally had to like seek it out because I felt so disconnected from my identity that I literally had no idea what my favorite color was. Like, you couldn't have paid me money to know. I had no idea. And so sometimes it is just kind of getting out there and trying stuff and realizing, oh, I don't like that. Okay, let's try this. Okay, I'll wear all orange today. Okay, I kind of like orange. Like, just kind of randomly figuring things out.
Well, that's why we're totally constantly growing and evolving. And I think that's the beauty of it, is that I had this like odd realization the other day in yoga. It's not odd, but I'm like, who decides what is normal, right? I think society honestly, it's not even just Western society. It's also Eastern society. Like, you grow up, you get a job, you get married, and then like you follow these things and you're supposed to have your life figured out by a certain period. And if you don't feel like you have it all figured out, then you're behind. Like, I'm in my late 20s. And you know what's so interesting is that when I was before 25, my mom just like automatically categorized me as like a 25-year-old. Ever since I've been 25, she's in her mind, I'm 30. So like from 25, 26, 27, every time I'm talking to her, she'll say things like, you're 30 years old. Like, what have you done? You're 30 years old. You should have a car. You should have a house. You should have like a family. And I'm over here like,
Hang on, you skipped some steps.
No, seriously though. But like, I literally started, even in the last couple of years, even though I'm living in California, she's in Canada, we have that space. There was almost like subconsciously this part of my mind that's like, you're behind, Evelyn. Like, you need to be. And then there was one day I was talking to my mentor and I'm sitting here and she's like, this is when I was still 26. She's like, Evelyn, go and be a 26-year-old. Like, go and do those things. Because I put so much pressure on myself to have to succeed in a certain way in like my business. And just even honestly, the last couple of months, I've had this energy and this feeling of like sitting back and being like, man, I literally have 3 years until I'm 30. What am I doing trying to rush everything? Like, you get to have fun, you get to play. And it's interesting because even in your healing journey, you think that you get to a point where you're like, oh, like, I've done so much healing and I'm healed and all is good. But then you go through another cycle of like growing and evolving. And it's just interesting. So like, my point in all this for anyone who's listening is allow yourself to constantly be a beginner in all areas of life. Allow yourself the grace to constantly change, because I thought that I was so certain in what I wanted to do in this life, my purpose. Like, I have a very successful coaching business. And just within the last like month or two, so much has just flipped itself on its head in my own life, with me discovering parts of myself that I didn't even know, like my sexual orientation or whatever that might be. So it's like, wow.
Yeah, no. And I think the thing I really appreciate the bringing up the timeline, because I think the timeline can be really overwhelming. And I also think that the timeline of getting everything, all right, let's go, let's go, let's go, that's been imposed on us since we were literally like babies, right? There's so much pressure. And I think the thing is a lot of us, especially like anyone who resonated with being kind of like an overachiever or feeling like their performance was like representative of their worth as a kid, we often have this pressure that we have on ourselves to just go, 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 go. And I think that that's one of the things that kind of robbed us of our childhood. And there can be so many other things, right? It could be that your parents put that pressure on you, or it could be that, like you mentioned, you were so focused on survival that you didn't get a chance to be a kid. And so the thing is if you're in a spot, like a space now in your life where you have that time and you have the space to be able to play and grow and learn about yourself and figure out what your ethics are and figure out, okay, what's important to me and how do I want to kind of structure my life? Allow yourself that time because, you know, society is going to put pressure on you no matter what. That's going to be there. I don't really think that's going to change. But if you already kind of missed out on being a kid because of whatever pressure was there, whatever circumstance was there, take advantage of the fact that you have the time now and that you have the time to be able to, you know, prioritize meeting those needs, even if that looks kind of goofy and even if that's not super aesthetically pleasing. Like I know for some people it has been, eating kind of foods that are kind of kiddish, like kid cuisine and doing, you know, eating Kraft mac and cheese a lot. Or it could be playing with colors in the way that you dress and in your makeup and in your hair. And even if someone looks at you and says, okay, you're 27, you shouldn't have blue hair. It's like, well, if you didn't get to have blue hair as a kid and you want it now, like it doesn't matter. And so having that space to just play, and even if that goes until you're 50 or 60 or 70 and you're able to just play and play and play, like I admire so much when people just embrace that like childlike self, because for me it's been so difficult. I have it so hardwired in me to be like an achiever and figure out how I can keep achieving, and the shame that creeps in when I'm not achieving is really intense. And a lot of the times playing can feel like a failure, and stopping and playing can feel like, okay, I'm not doing enough. But I kind of have viewed it as, I understand that it might look goofy to someone else, or I might even be disappointing someone by choosing to play. I might be just disappointing parents or grandparents or teachers or whatever, right? Mm-hmm. But I only have, like saying I only have one life is super cliche, but you only have one life and you only have one timeline to be able to do what you want and try to figure out what makes you happy and what makes you feel joyful and how to meet your needs. Mm-hmm. And I would really suggest like just trying not to take that for granted and trying to figure out, how do I meet my needs? And when we go back to reparenting, I think that can mean a lot of things. I think that could mean, you know, dancing really hardcore because you always got shamed when you were a child. It could mean buying stuffed animals that feel really good and cozy to you because you didn't really get the hugs that you needed as a kid. It could mean, you know, choosing the career path that's actually fun and playful and isn't serious and isn't helping people. I know that was a big one for a lot of people as they were so pressured, especially in religion, pressured to help and save people, that then they look for career paths that are like saving and helping. And those career paths are so valid and so important. But I was so set on being a trauma therapist for a really long time. And it hit me that I was like, yeah, I've had enough trauma, I think. Like, I actually don't think that I want my whole career to center on trauma. I don't think I can do it. And so I've been looking for career paths that are more playful and more fun and a little bit less high stakes. And so whatever that looks like, reparenting can look like a lot of different things. It could also look like maybe you write down your ethics system. Maybe you take some time and get out a Word document and write down what you want to be important to you and what you don't want to be important to you, what you want to prioritize in relationships. Maybe it's setting boundaries, that maybe you didn't have boundaries as a kid. So maybe it's learning how to set boundaries and not people please. There can be so many things that it really does can manifest in like 100,000 different ways. But just taking the time to give yourself space and grace to do that, I think is really important. And it's also, you deserve that. Like, you deserve to be able to have the space and the grace to figure out what you need and how to give yourself that.
100%. I really liked what you were kind of insinuating a few moments ago, talking about, not insinuating, but you were kind of talking about how, okay, what brought this into my mind was I've had two near-death experiences. And I think especially in 2020, you know, with the pandemic and everything, a lot of people had this spiritual awakening. You know, a lot of people quit their jobs. A lot of people got divorced or they ended their engagements, and just a lot of like massive life changes that they were too scared to do before. And right. So one of the blessings that comes with a near-death experience is that you truly get to that point where you're like, I won't see another day. And so there's something that alters in your brain that makes you kind of literally reflect every moment of your entire life up to that point. And so when you're gifted the opportunity to live another day, then you start to shift. So a lot of people, you know, I had a recent client come up to me and she's a massively successful entrepreneur. And she's like, she's literally hiring me to have more fun because she can't have fun. She feels guilty. She can't take time off. Like she can, but the amount of guilt and shame that comes with it is just not worth it. So she just does it. So she's literally needing help reprogramming that part of her brain. And so every time I'm on interviews and people are like, you know, what's one thing that you want to leave with your listeners? Don't allow yourself to be that, like, don't wait until you have to have something like a near-death experience for you to start choosing yourself. Mm-hmm. Because what happens for a lot of people is that they start to realize that they've been living for everyone else but themselves. They have followed a path that has been paved for them instead of forging their own path. So many people are in careers that they thought their parents wanted of them, because if they went into that career path, then they'll finally be worthy, that they'll finally be loved, that they'll finally be successful. Or they, you know, got into the first relationship and then got married and had kids because that's what society wanted of them. And now they're in a relationship that, or a marriage that they're miserable in, and they're in their 30s and 40s and they don't want to start over. I can't tell you how many people that I've worked with, and I don't want to say I'm proud of this, but like, you know, I've had a couple clients work with me and within like the first 2 months, they have broken off an engagement, but they're also the happiest that they've ever been. I've also seen relationships completely heal after decades of trauma. So I really wish, and I think my hope for humanity is that people start choosing themselves and really start coming home to themselves. And I was talking to a spiritual mentor and she said, you know, the word for the collective this season is discernment. Like discerning what's good for you and having the courage to go and do it, despite how uncomfortable it makes others. And then discerning what's not good for you and allowing yourself to let that go, because that is what will allow us to continue living in alignment with who we are.
Yeah. And it's interesting too, because I know if anyone else listening to that who grew up in a Christian church, my heart always like twinges at discernment. Because it's like such a, it gets used so much in Christianese circles. But I will say, I remember I hit like, it was like my senior year of college. And I realized, first of all, that discernment is not an inherently religious thing. And that it's kind of another word for like trusting your intuition and trusting your gut.
Yes. And let's use a different word.
No. I mean, discernment's a great word. And I kind of started to, saying take back the word sounds silly, but like I started to use that word a little more in my life outside of religious contexts and realized when you grow up and you have a lot of trauma, you often don't trust your gut. That's like a really common thing. And it's a really common thing of trauma therapy and trauma work is to learn how to just either retrust your intuition in your gut or learn it for the first time. Maybe you've never been able to trust your intuition. And, I think part of that is trauma just disconnects us so much from our body and from our brain. And I think a lot of people who experience trauma feel really like their body is somewhere else. And it's kind of like you're living outside of yourself. And in my opinion, and from my personal journey with inner child work, part of the coming back to my body, which I literally have tattooed on me because I try to remind myself of it so much, is relearning what I like, what I don't like, what I needed, what I didn't get, relearning how to trust myself and trust that when I say I need something, I really need something, relearning how to trust my body about, am I hungry? Am I not hungry? After growing up with a lot of diet culture, relearning how to trust my body if I'm hurt, if my feelings are hurt, because even a lot of trauma is sometimes maybe you got gaslit as a kid. Maybe you never got to actually own the fact that your feelings were hurt. Maybe every time you mentioned your feelings were hurt, someone said, no, they're not. Don't be a baby. Part of inner child healing is like going back to that and saying, okay, hang on. No, I am hurt. My feelings are hurt and I'm going to trust myself on that. And I deserve to trust myself on that. And my feelings deserve to be heard. And so it's a lot of going back to your intuition and to your discernment and figuring out, okay, hang on. Let's listen to my body, to my brain, to myself and figure out, okay, hang on, what do I actually need right now?
which I talked about in another episode about just relearning all of those physical sensations as well. Like if you're hurt, do I want to dance? Do I want to cry? Do I want to laugh? You can get so disconnected from your body that those things feel really foreign. And so part of healing, in my opinion, and a large part of healing for me has just been going back to my body. And I think that deeply applies to inner child work as well. And I want us to end on forgiveness, because it's one thing that I haven't talked about like at all this series. And I think it's so important. Sometimes as adults, we feel anger towards our younger selves for how they acted to survive or how they handled their trauma. I know as an adult, I initially thought that my anger was just directed towards my brain, like towards my mental illness, that I was having anger towards the fact that my brain wasn't working the way that I wanted it to. And I realized after a good amount of therapy that a lot of my anger was directed towards this little version of myself, because I felt like she didn't handle what she should have in the way that I wanted her to, for whatever reason. And in my personal journey, there's been a lot of learning how to forgive her for what she had to do to survive and forgive her for how she handled things. And I view my inner child as anything under 18, because for me, 18 was when I left my household. That was when I was able to actually start to work through things, get therapy, get coping tools and coping mechanisms. I was out of the church. There was so much that I actually finally got to get up and walk away from. And I didn't have the independence to do that prior because I was in a pretty restrictive household. And so for me, I view my inner child as anything under 18. And so there's been times where I reacted in ways that I didn't want to react. And I felt really trapped and I didn't have the tools. And I have to just keep reminding myself, I was a kid. I was a literal kid and I didn't have tools. I didn't have therapy. I didn't have any way to handle it aside from how I handled it. And now I do. And so I forgive her for what she did to survive. And now I get to choose as an adult who has the tools to act in a different way if I face that circumstance again. So how would you, what advice would you give, I guess, to someone who is feeling that anger and that disconnect from their inner child? And even throughout this whole series, maybe they're like, okay, well, I just have this anger and this kind of hatred for my inner child because they didn't handle things the way I wanted them to handle it. How would you suggest that they move towards like grace and eventually forgiveness towards their inner child?
Yeah. You forgiving yourself, like you forgiving the other person or you forgiving the younger you, is only allowing you to free yourself and allows you to move on with your life. You don't do it because the other person deserves it. You do it for yourself. And so kind of shifting that back to like you being in power, I think helps a lot, because at the end of the day, when you really think about it, forgiveness is really one of the forgiveness and compassion go hand in hand with one another. And that compassion is really honestly sometimes the only thing that allows us to be able to get to a place of calm and peace in our body, which honestly, at the end of the day, is what we all want. Majority of the people that I work with, and I ask, what is your vision? Like what would make this next year the best year of your life? And they're like, calm and peace, because so many of us don't even realize it, but we are just riddled with stress and anxiety and overwhelm, and our body's just constantly in fight or flight, or we're constantly feeling like we're walking on eggshells. So when you're able to forgive yourself, you're allowing yourself to move on, you're able to have more compassion, which then leads to that calm and peace.
Yeah, I think that the from a practical side, I guess, because I know that it can be really hard practically to like have compassion for yourself. Like I've had so many times where I'm like, yeah, like self-kindness, self-love. And I'm like, oh, I don't know how the fuck to do that. I know for me, it really helped me to disconnect a little bit with, I don't know. I think I would look at my past and I would look at how I acted as a kid, and I would view that child kind of as just like a replica of who I am now, and view that child as an adult. And therefore I would hold that child to kind of adult standards and expect her to act like an adult, like a you know, well-functioning adult, even though she was a kid. And so for me, when I talk about my inner child, and I'm sure if anyone listens to the podcast, they've heard me do this many times, but I'll intentionally separate. And so I'll intentionally say like, well, 5-year-old Fina didn't have the tools to deal with that. And I'll often say like, she was just a baby, because for me, it kind of provides the space to not, it's harder to be angry at a 5-year-old than it is to be at myself now. You know what I mean?
100%.
And yeah. So if I separate it in my head a little bit and say, oh, well, she was just a baby, you know, she did what she could, it gives me kind of this grace that I don't feel like I have towards myself at my age now. And so if anyone is kind of looking for like, okay, but like, you know, I'd love to be kinder to myself, but how on earth do I do that? I found that that's helpful. I've also found a lot of friends of mine, and myself included, having baby pictures. Like at the very beginning of this series, I asked all my guests for a child that, or a photo that represented their inner child. And that could be literally any age, doesn't matter. And they all sent in, you know, baby photos, yourself included. And I think that one of the things that I found helpful is it's really easy to be angry at your inner child kind of from a distance, and you can kind of hold them in your head as this villain. But when you have a photo to match to that being, and you see your tiny, tiny little self in your, you know, with your little toy and your little tiny overalls or whatever, and it's just this little tiny version of you, it's a lot harder to be angry at that, to see this little tiny baby version and be like, oh, it was her. she's evil. That's a lot harder. And so I've had people say that they have photos of their little baby selves like framed, or maybe they have them right by the food, because maybe you have a hard time feeding yourself. And maybe seeing that little version of yourself, it's like, okay, well, she deserves food, and so do I. Anything that kind of helps remind you that that was a little tiny kiddo who did the very best that they could, bringing in that empathy and bringing in that compassion, I think can be really, really, really helpful. And it was really helpful for me. I literally have a baby photo of myself framed on my bookshelf for that purpose, just to kind of remind myself, no, she was little and she did what she could. And that's kind of my primary hope for this series, is just that people are able to remind themselves, I was tiny, I did what I could, I still deserve to play, I still deserve to have good relationships, I still deserve to heal from this trauma. I did everything that I could, and now I'm an adult and I have the resources and I can choose to do better. But that little version of myself did what she could. And that's really all you can do.
Agreed.
Well, thank you so much for coming on and for taking the time and sharing all of your wonderful knowledge about generational trauma, because this is something that I'm so glad I had you on to talk about it, because I did not have the background to share what you shared. So thank you so much.
Thank you so much for having me on. It was such a fun conversation. I feel like we could talk about this all day.
Oh yeah, for sure. Well, I want to give people a chance to find you and follow your work. So do you want to share a little bit about where people can find you on social media, if you have a website, anything like that?
Yeah. So you can find me on honestly all the social media platforms, my website, Spotify, YouTube, TikTok, Instagram, all with the same handle. So makes it easy is Evolve with Evelyn. You'll be able to find me anywhere. And something that I love to offer people, the listeners of podcasts that I'm on, is I have a session called the Spark Session. It's my signature inner child and generational trauma healing session. It is my favorite thing to do. It is the most transformational session. And what we really do in these sessions is we go deep with inner child and generational trauma healing. I'm so proud to say that I have 100% client success rate. And so for everyone who is listening, if you let me know that you came from this podcast, I am more than happy to offer you a discount on that session. And so you can't get that anywhere else. So if that's something that interests you, if you have any questions, honestly, about how to dive a little bit deeper into this work, if you want, you know, me to send you resources or guide you or even see if the Spark Session is something for you, just reach out to me on Instagram. I love connecting with you guys and having conversations like these.
Amazing. That's fantastic. And you have a podcast as well, correct?
Yes, Evolve with Evelyn.
Perfect. I was wondering what the Spotify thing was. I was like, I think that's a podcast. Well, thank you so much for coming on. I really appreciate it.
Thank you.
Okay, well, that's all the time that we have for today, you guys. Thank you so much for listening. And if you enjoyed the podcast, please rate us 5 stars on iTunes and Spotify and leave us a review. You can also follow the blog on Instagram at Serafina Blog and visit us online at serafinablog.com, or you can visit the podcast online at mindfulmindspod.com. You can also find us on TikTok at Mindful Minds Podcast, and you can find me on TikTok at Fina_Bina, FINA_BINA, for more deconstruction content. And as always, to end our time, unclench your jaw, take a deep breath, and remember, you can always learn, you can always grow, and you can always choose to live your life in a more mindful way. I will see you guys next week for the finale of the Inner Child series.